Hello
Hello, everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife with Midwifery Business Consultation. I am speaking with Patsy Harmon today. She is a retired midwife with extensive background in multiple books. And so we connected with Midwifing the Midwife email that came out. I asked if I could interview her. I was really fascinated with her background. So, Patsy, thank you so much for joining me today.
That's a great pleasure. I told you before how much I liked your idea of midwifing the midwife. I think
Yeah,
there's
it's
a great need for
perfect.
that. Yeah.
It's my calling since I crashed and burned in 2017. Everything I do, if I'm going to be part of it, it's going to be if I can support the midwives in any way in the background, I'm all about that. So thank you. Patsy, so tell me, I know you have an extensive background in midwifery, but maybe the high level elevator speech of your midwifery journey and what you've been doing even now to advocate for midwifery.
Well, it started back in the 80s. We moved to a commune in West Virginia. A lot of people who were active in the anti-war, the anti-Vietnam War movement, and devoted to nonviolence, we felt like we needed to do something more than just say, ban the bomb or something like that. That we needed to find a way to live that was sustainable and revered the earth and cared about other people. So we bought a farm very cheaply, and somebody donated the money for it. And we lived there for quite a few years. And I had had my first baby in the hospital up in Minnesota because there were no midwives there, but it wasn't a bad experience. It was in a little hospital in Two Harbors, Minnesota. And the father, it was the only place a father would be allowed there. To be in the room. And when we came down to West Virginia, people were starting to come to the state because land was cheap. And they were wanting to have babies at home. They were coming from California and Texas and New York and New Jersey, and there was no one to help them. And by this time, I had seen a few births as a coach and a Lamaze teacher, and I had had one baby, and that made me a midwife. That was all the training I had besides a couple of textbooks.
Worked for Ina May, so
And Ina May was probably one of my books, I'm sure. And after a while, I did maybe 20 births. I was able to find a way to do an apprenticeship in Austin, Texas, where there was a group of midwives who had actually been trained by a nurse midwife before she left the state because she wanted somebody to be there to help people have home births. So when I came back, I felt a little more confident. And after about a year, I realized the people I were helping were all like me. They ate all organic food that they grew themselves. They cut down the trees to make their log cabins and drug them out of the woods. And mainly, they believed they could do it. They have confidence in their body. But, West Virginia is a very poor state. And I realized there were a lot of the local people who needed advocates, who needed support. They weren't really good candidates for home birth. A lot of them smoked and didn't have a very nutritious diet, but they needed somebody to be with them who cared about them and would have them, help them have a gentle birth. So at that point, I thought, well, maybe I should be a nurse midwife because then I could deliver these people in the hospital. And that's what I did. And I never went back to home birth, but it was not because I didn't think it was a safe alternative. Some people ask me that, did you not believe in it anymore? No, I believed in it. It's just that it's hard to get a real job, like a paying job, and then also say, I know it's my shift here in the hospital, but I have to leave now because somebody's having their baby at home.
You can't
So
do just a little bit here and there. And I didn't tell you that was part of my other perk of doing locum assignments. I still get to do a little bit of home births here and there, but I just take a gap with my locum contract. So that was another angle of like that unique angle of midwifery.
That's a good plan, really. I maybe could have done that, but I didn't think about it. I don't even know if I knew about locums then. So anyway, I had a good career, probably 30 or 40 years of delivering babies. And after, as I was going to midwifery school, my husband, who had been an EMT, decided he was going to be a physician. He thought he would do family medicine, but actually. He had been to a lot of births with me as an EMT. He was sort of my backup who sat in the kitchen. And actually, that's we so never cool. really needed him for a resuscitation or anything like that. But he decided he was going to become an OBGYN. And he really loves surgery. He's the kind of guy who likes to fix things like cars. And he was a carpenter and things like that. So he's really good.
I hear that a lot with obstetricians in past lives of being
carpenters.
Is that true? Yes, I've heard it. I didn't know that. I've heard it six times before. Yes.
Oh, no kidding.
I've heard it a lot. I don't know, something with just your hands, working with your hands. And yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and you and I talked a little bit before. We worked in private practice in a hospital. And really, I was never trained in any business things in midwifery school. And he wasn't in medical school or a residency. There's no training at all for that. So we probably made all the mistakes that you're now teaching people not to do ahead of time.
I could probably do a whole talk on that. Yeah, we try to do just as much risk, but you can never plan for that white elephant to walk in the room, but you can try to plan for everything else. So.
Well, and it's nice to be aware that there could be a white elephant that walked in the room instead
That's very
of
true.
Very mm-hmm. innocent. And one of the things I spoke with you a minute ago about was watching the money. And I think there was, you know, we knew we would have to take loans and we would go into debt and we would have to hire staff. But I just didn't know that much about how things work. And the first thing we had an accountant, but he wasn't a CPA. And then we hired some people that seemed nice without probably checking references. And mm-hmm. then one person turned out to be embezzling money. And it wasn't like $10,000 or anything like that, but it was just a shock to find out that things like that could happen with people that your gut instinct thought were nice and kind and supportive and all those mm-hmm. kinds of things.
Yeah.
So after a while, and it wasn't, well, I was into my 60s, really, when I started writing books. And I know this is important. We stopped delivering babies when the medical malpractice insurance in West Virginia, and this was, maybe 15 years ago, skyrocketed. And this wasn't just here. It was all across the country. But West Virginia was considered a high-risk state. And I think that the insurance companies were able to get away with jumping the amount of money that it would cost even mm-hmm. more, say, than they might in Ohio or Pennsylvania or some surrounding states. And it was a loss to us and it was a loss to our patients because mm-hmm. by this time in private practice, we were well known as, you know, the place to go if you mm-hmm. wanted a more natural birth. And since Tom was very supportive and we had had two of our babies at home, and this was even before he was a doctor, it was so nice to work with him. And I guess this is hard for people to find a doc that really respects them and what they're trying to do. But the one thing I loved about Tom was that if we never needed him, baby wasn't coming. She's pushing 3 hours or something and the head's still sitting there. Maybe Dr. Harmon just needs a little vacuum assist to get this baby out. And what was so cool about him is he would come in without any feeling that he was shaming someone. Like, why did you let her push so long? Or what, you know, just whatever. And he would just say, so you need a little help? And then he would sit down and he would usually pull the baby out so that it was crowning and let the woman push her own baby out. And sometimes we'd do a four-handed catch so I could support the perineum while he was, you know, assisting with the shoulders and things like that.
Amazing.
So by this time we were well known as a place to go and it was a loss to the community, but the good thing was I was just doing GYN and early OB then, and I was going through menopause and I would get up at night and write some of the stories that the patients told me. And I always wondered, I thought I was always a person who you could talk to and that I listened, but I think I had more time or something, or maybe I wasn't as tired because I hadn't been up all the night.
You could comprehend it all better.
So I would get up at night when I couldn't sleep and I would write down, you know, something that happened that day. And it was a busy practice. So I, you know, my husband is like, if I wanted to tell him, like, oh my God, Leslie, let me tell you what happened. This patient told me, and then her husband does this and that. And oh my God, this is just amazing. You know, you would be just like me. You'd be like, oh my God, really? But like, if I told Tom that, he'd be like, okay, is she safe? Is there anything we need to do? Mm-hmm. And that would be the end of the story. So I started writing the stories down, and let's see if I show you. I'll show you the first book.
Yeah, I'd love to.
It's called The Blue Cotton Gown, and it's a memoir.
Okay.
It's probably coming out backwards on the on where.
Nope, it's perfect. Yeah, it looks good. Love it. Blue cotton.
So it's really a series of stories. I'll just read a little bit. I just saw this one, Searchlight. I don't write down the patient's stories every night, the stories they tell in the exam room. Some nights I sleep, not many. Some nights I write poetry in a worn spiral notebook. Some nights I go over the practice's low bank account or lie on my back in the dark and worry about our three mostly grown boys. My mind works like a searchlight, moving back and forth through the shadows, looking for trouble. Tonight I wander the living room in my white robe like a ghost, worrying about Orion. That's my middle son's first year in his Master of Fine Arts program at the University of Cincinnati. His live-in girlfriend of 7 years, Lucy, left him 6 months ago. He's alone in a place where he knows hardly anyone, and he's still mourning her loss. Then I just go on to tell about the kids.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it goes back and forth between the patients and
kind of what you're thinking.
So it's like a memoir. It's like a
journal. I love it. Yes.
But I was able to get an agent. And then soon after that, I got a publisher. So that started me out. And then I wrote another memoir, which goes back to the hippie days and more of the home birth thing and that kind of thing. And then I thought, you know, I'm kind of milking my own life here. Maybe I should like try writing a novel. So I did. I wrote my first book, my novel, which was the one that people mostly know about. It's The Midwife of Hope River, set in 1930 during the Great Depression. And I wrote that in 2008 when we were having the Great Recession here. And I thought people could relate to that because there were people losing their businesses and losing their homes and their livelihood and all the stress that goes with that, and seeing if maybe you're insulated in some way, but you see it happen to friends and family. So that's how I wrote that book. And after that, I thought, I really love these characters. I don't want to just end it. So I ended up having a series of four books, and I'm working on the fifth one.
That is so amazing. Did you ever think when you started being a midwife, oh, I'll be a retired author and just write a series of books? Like the opportunities that come up, we don't ever anticipate in life.
No, that's true. And it's the same thing with you and your business, right? Helping other people.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time before I would say that I was an author. But I did say I was a midwife. And then I would think, oh, you're not delivering babies or even helping people in the clinic. Why are you a midwife? And I thought this, I thought to myself, and in some ways, I think this is what you do too. A midwife supports people. They educate people. They calm people down. Sometimes we make people laugh. Give them guidance. And I thought, you know, I'm still doing all those things.
You are, yes. We so joke all books, the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was one thing I didn't realize until I started getting emails from people who had read the books. And they would say, your books were so supportive to me. Or they gave me so much comfort. And I thought, really? Because some of the stories are kind of exciting about mining disasters and floods and forest fires.
But if there's little gems that stand out to them and that hit home to them.
Mm-hmm. And I think just the idea of seeing midwives in another time and place, but seeing how they help other people. And if you're having a hard time, but you identify as a midwife and you look at that and you go like, yeah, that's what I do. And it's important, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think
that's how I became a writer.
Yeah, I love it. I think we talk all the time, the definition of midwife is with woman. It's not catching babies. And there's so much stigma. Midwives have an embarrassment. Like, I'm not, because instantly the little bit the community knows, oh, you're a midwife. Do you do it at home or the hospital? And if they even know anything about a midwife. And then you feel embarrassed, like, no, I write books. No, I'm a business consultant. No, I have a women's health clinic. No, I do sexual health. Like, we have to get past the stigma. I am this type of midwife and I'm proud of it. We put ourselves up for failure if we don't advocate on the other side to consumers. Like, midwives help people. Like, we help our community. That's the way it used to be. They were the primary care provider for the communities back in the day. And so we have to revive that mentality again.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And just the variety of ways that we can help people. I mean, some people work in international field. Yeah. Some people work in politics, you know. Yep. A lot of things that I probably wouldn't really like politics, but
but if it gets you at the table important. To advocate, how expensive lobbyists are, that's the smart midwives. There's 2-3 of them, Michelle Monroe in Georgia and Kathy Gordon in Kansas. Like, they're getting themselves a seat at the table so they don't have to pay the hundreds of thousands of dollars for the lobbyist.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That is really great.
Yeah. So I love what you're doing, Patsy, with all your wonderful books. Do you feel like with the midwifery side, did you do a lot of historical, like before you did that book with the depression, you could give great the midwife angle of today's time. Did you have to do a lot of research what it was like for the midwives during that time? And how did you do that research? I mean, there's not that much that I could find on the internet for historical contents for that detailed.
I did research on almost every page. And sometimes, you know, if you had 3 hours to work to write, 2 hours might have been on the internet looking for answers to questions. The good thing is that if you look hard enough and if you want me to
teach the right places to dig, yeah.
You get better at it. Sometimes it would be just odd things, like one of the stories. Do you know what the CCC was? Civilian Conservation Corps during the Great Depression. I think it was Roosevelt started the CCC as a way to put young men to work because he felt like there was going to be a revolution in the United States if he didn't get, you know, some of these young guys someplace to work, and their families needed the money. So the government would pay to have you fix roads or plant trees.
With you've the parks, a lot of the national parks, that was what that program was called.
Okay. That's right. So in every state, wherever we live, you go to your state parks, and they most likely the picnic tables and pavilions and roads were all put together by the CCC guys.
Okay.
But like, so I had a story, one of my books has the CCC camp in it, and I had to like really look for research on that. But like an example of the odd things that you can do is I was describing a CCC truck with a bunch of young men in the back passing along on the road, and I thought, wonder what color that would be, and I couldn't find it because all the pictures, if you go on images of CCC camps, are in black and white.
You'd have to find a journal of somebody describing.
No, here's what I did. I put in CCC truck color or something like that. And guess what showed up? A guy in Maine who restores cars like that. And I actually emailed him and asked him what color was the truck that he was fixing. And it was green, which I figured it would be green or brown.
You just don't want to make assumptions that then someone calls you out. So you're actually a legit historian. You're not just telling stories. You're making them to historical content. And that's amazing.
Yeah, and things about birth. I mean, you know, sometimes you can't find the actual midwife birth, but you can find out how the doctors were doing it. And in my stories, the midwife of Hope River, her name is Patience. A lot of it she learns by doing, and she finds out that if the woman gets out of bed, the baby comes sooner. Like,
I mean, things we take for granted
if the only book you had to read was some doctor book, nobody ever did that. You think they're doing it the right way.
You think that
there's one point where she's in a different story where the woman is doing what she wants her to do. She's walking around and things like that. Still, the baby isn't coming. The contractions are erratic. So she says to someone, we need the male presence in here. We need the male vigor.
I love it. I love it.
And he gets in there and she makes some slow dance, which, you know, we've all done that in births, right? And got people up out of bed and maybe had some music if we could, had it available, and had people, you know, sway around. And guess what? The contractions get sexier.
I know. So, I love Ina May's quote, what gets the babies in gets the babies out.
So anyway, it's been fun writing the books. And I've separated the historical fiction about every 5 years. So now I'm up to 1950 and the civil rights movement. And it's got more about diversity and caring for people of different races and things like that.
Oh, my goodness. I think it's amazing. I mean, every single thing we can do to make awareness of midwives and really advocate, you have a personal passion and expertise versus just a generic author. You're going to give such a different angle. I'm definitely going to dig into your books after we're done chatting. They sound amazing.
Yeah, I think you'll like them. And, you know, it's interesting when, like, there's about 7,000 reviews of The Midwife of Hope River on Amazon. And every now and then, I don't really look at them that much. My husband says you're not allowed to look at any of the bad ones because I obsess about
them. But I know. We all do. Yeah.
It's 4.5 out of 5 scores. So that's good. But every now and then I'll get one from somebody who said they didn't know anything about midwives. A lot of the people are like doulas or people who've had midwives for their births or midwives themselves. Occasionally a doctor will tune in. But when I get somebody who didn't know anything, that's like a delight for me. It's like, oh, so exciting.
You know? Opened up the door of opportunity of what's going to change in their life and their kids' lives.
True.
No, I was thinking, I got into the series of The Virgin River. I don't know if you've ever seen that series, but it's about a midwife that goes. I said, I think they stole some of your ideas. Like, she was a nurse practitioner and a midwife. You'd like it. It's a series, I think, on Netflix, The Virgin River. Yeah? But yeah, the mayor for this little tiny town in the middle of nowhere, the doctor doesn't want to retire. He wants to work forever. So the mayor hires this midwife nurse practitioner that's supposed to take over, and he doesn't want her there. And she does so many
That sounds great.
Oh, it's a really good series. I tell you, it's highly addictive. But when you said Hope River, I was like, I wonder if Virgin River like read your books and took a different angle to it.
Maybe. So is it set in current time or in past?
I would say probably 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, nothing in 1920s. But like I think a lot of like the angle of just a midwife filling in for a community that's never had a midwife. They don't know what she is. But she also fills a lot more of the physician role because of her dual certification. But a lot of education and advocacy and some of the things she does. It's actually, I was pretty impressed. You know, as midwives, you're like, yeah, that wouldn't happen. That wouldn't happen. I was like, you know, they actually did a pretty good accurate job with the birth and with some of the stuff. Like, that's whoever, great. They had a midwife expert on their team. Good job.
You know, when my first novel came out was right around the time that Call the Midwife was on TV. So it was really a help for the books because a lot of people were watching that and going like, oh, I'm going to get a book about midwives. And then
Yeah, when we had our birth center, I actually had an ad on the local PBS public broadcast with the commercials for Call the Midwife, and our birth center was out there. I was like, I totally needed it. Yeah, so there's fun, creative ways midwives can get themselves out there, because these people watching the shows, they may or may not have heard of it, but maybe it's a grandma, but now they can tell their kids, like, hey, there is an actual local midwife here. So I think every single way we can make awareness of midwifery, not just the traditional way of like calling and putting a billboard up there, like, you're advocating for awareness of midwifery. So thank you, Patsy.
Thanks.
Yeah. So is there any other words of wisdom? I always like to finish with, you have so much knowledge and expertise of where you've seen midwifery go. Do you have any words of wisdom to us young, new generation of the newbies that are coming out for midwifery?
Well, certainly get advice from people like you if you're starting your own practice, or even if you wanted someone to review a contract with a physician. And there's just so many issues to think about that most of us have not. And a lot of us would be just so happy to find a backup doctor that we're like ready to sign, right?
Yeah, we're like, you want my firstborn? Okay, you're going to sign up with me.
Right. I've just been to school and I'm out now. I need help. But I think the importance of finding a good backup doctor is to find somebody who respects what you're doing and doesn't just want you there as a body to fill up, you know, like some OBGYNs are just really busy and they say, okay, yeah, she's cheap compared to a doctor and she'll see my patients for me. Little do the doctors know that some of those patients are going to want the midwife.
It happens all the time. They wanted a physician assistant that could catch babies and then they didn't realize what they got themselves because now their clients have a higher, their patients have a higher caliber of philosophy model they've never been exposed to.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so I guess to midwives facing that thing, just not to rush into things, to be sure that the physician understands and respects what midwifery care is. Right. It would probably save you some pain later on to have really looked at those things and not just jump into things too easily. I think that's one of the hardest things, it used to be anyway, is to find a backup doctor. And there are places in West Virginia where there still are no midwives because the docs have all decided they want all the deliveries, especially as the birth rate is going down. That may make it even harder. But that's why educating the public is so important to see what's different, you know, and to look for opportunities to educate the public, to speak. If there are women's groups you can speak to, or, you know, how to establish yourself in the community. Those would be the kind of things that I would think about.
Well, and I think part of it, collaborating physicians are getting harder and harder because a lot of the physicians want to join big systems when they get out and there's less and less exposure of midwifery into what they're used to. So they don't even know what they don't know. We just need to find more EMT husbands that'll just go through OB school for us and we'll be set. So we're going to do a strategic plan of recruiting husbands and birth advocates to just, because it is, it's getting very difficult and having medical students, having people that are advocates from the very beginning, it makes an impact while they're going through school. Yes, I know it takes a long time for them to go through school, but yeah, physician collaborations are getting harder and harder across the country.
Mm-hmm. One of the good things I hear at WVU, which is I'm in Morgantown and that's where the university hospital is they have six midwives on staff who are teaching the residents how to deliver babies. So not all of those residents are going to grow up to be OBGYNs. In fact, it's probably only 5 or 10% they'll be in family medicine or internal medicine or surgery. But right from the get-go, they have a respect for midwives and what midwives can do for patients.
Huge difference, yeah.
So I think that's like, if people ever have a chance to teach in a medical system, that's a really cool job for midwives. The disadvantage is that you may not be able to have your own patients. You may be lumped in with just whoever's on labor that day. But I found, and maybe you have as well, since you do locums, that I can walk into a room and bond with that person right away. Mm-hmm. You sit on the bed, you hold their hand, you know, and they're just so relieved to have someone there who cares about them that it doesn't matter. Like the old way of midwifery is we wanted to bond with our patients from the first prenatal visit and see them for 9 months, you know, so they're like family and friends. Well, this is a different way of doing it, but still valuable, especially if you have an opportunity to have medical students or residents. Mm-hmm. And I would only let one come to a birth with me. And I would always say, you have to do something. You can't just stand there. You can hold her hand or whatever, you know, or hand me things. Or if I'm feeling really generous and it's a multip, I might let you sit at the perineum, but my hands are going to be in there too. So don't worry, you know. But I just didn't want, like, you know, your vision in a medical school system is the poor lady is trying to have a baby and there's four gawking people in white coats standing there staring at
taking
her.
Clipboard, taking notes. And, they see too much Grey's Anatomy.
I guess that's where it comes from, doesn't it? Somewhere like that.
Well, it's actually interesting because we've had such severe shortage of clinical sites, not just for midwifery, but also for nurses and for medical schools. A lot of the medical schools, if it's big hospital organizations, they get non-compete clauses. So if there's 2-3 medical schools in an area, one place will take take over. And I have a lot of home birth ladies, a lot of birth centers that have medical students and nursing school contracts really? To keep them open. So, I mean, we can think outside the box of not just thinking at our residents in a hospital setting, but if we can clinically precept in all settings, I mean, now they get to see really what home birth is versus we just show a midwifery in the hospital setting, what a water birth looks like, what is a transfer, what is this physiological birth look like at its core. So I think there's a lot of opportunities. Midwives don't realize not just serving our clients, but every single avenue of advocating with the medical community does have a ripple effect on support long-term.
That's great. And I really appreciate all that you're doing.
Yeah, there's exciting things. I appreciate what you've paved for us so far, and we'll just keep paving the way. That's our goal. But yeah, every I think COVID has thrown some curveballs, and everybody's like, oh, we're so grateful we have midwives. And the midwives have been so burnt out in the out of hospital community. They were busy before COVID. I mean, people are like, oh, we went from 1.5-2% to now 4%. Woohoo. And I'm like, we don't have enough of a structural support for the community-based midwives to handle growth. They just, so we have to figure out how to get more midwives in a good structured support level. And so that's where I'm a vision, and I'm like, okay, what can we do so midwifery can grow and get to 20-30% of ladies? We can't even handle a little bit. We need to figure out these basic systems. So yeah, your books will help, having clinical sites, having these wonderful resources we're all putting together.
That's great.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Patsy. What's the best way people can reach out to you or learn about your books? Do you have your own website they can go to, or Amazon? Like, where can they go?
Well, the books are easy to get on Amazon, but there are a lot of them are in bookstores, but you maybe have to ask where, because they're back in the stack somewhere, or they'll order it for you. But you can use Amazon and just put in Patricia Harmon, not Patsy. Yeah, Patsy's what everybody calls me, except my editor and my banker. Patricia is the author name. And Harmon is H-A-R-M-A-N. But I think I would pop up anyway. And then my website is just www.patriciaharmon.com, and it tells about my books. And on Amazon, one of the cool things is, and I bet you've done this, where it says look inside on the book. So you could actually read a few chapters to see if it appeals to you. Most of them, people say they can't put them down, which I consider a great compliment, because when I get a book like that, I'm like, this is the greatest book. I read it in all one day. I couldn't put it down.
So it's one thing, I think that's that credible, like when a midwife says to you, oh my gosh, you're an amazing midwife. When someone tells you, I couldn't put your book down, that's like the hallmark to authors. Yeah.
Maybe. Yes. I guess so.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Patsy, for your time. Enjoy your travels to Canada. And I really appreciate you squeezing this in. Hope it's a nice vacation.
Thank you.
Okay. Talk soon.